This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Happy Canada Day to all of our friends and fellow listeners and everybody up in Canada north of the border. Thanks for tuning in on this really nice Wednesday morning here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Brayton Wilson back in the captain's chair once again here on this morning, on this Wednesday morning here, as I'm filling in for the instigators all week. I'll be back in once again tomorrow to wrap up the week, as again, we're off on Friday for the 4th of July holiday. And of course, same thing going for One Bills Live, as it'll be Nate Geary on today, and then tomorrow it'll be the DiBiase brothers and Joe and Louis DiBiase carrying you through. And then of course, next week, Monday, everything kind of gets back to normal here for local programming with the instigators and One Bills Live back after their week off on this nice little break that they get to have. So thanks again for tuning in all this week. Thanks again for sticking with us, and happy day to everybody here. Brayton Wilson once again here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Today is going to be a pretty good show. I'd like to think it's going to be a pretty good show. My plan was to talk a little bit about the defensive group, and after yesterday talking about the forwards and how everything's going to look, and whether you think it's going to look much of the same, it's going to look totally revamped or look a little younger for next season up forward. Today I wanted to discuss a little bit about the blue line and maybe the futures of what's going to happen there in terms of the futures of Rasmus Ristolainen, Brandon Montour. Will we get to see maybe a guy like Will Borgen compete for the roster spot in Buffalo, or is it going to be, you know, much of the same there as well? It could totally be the same look that the Sabres had last year, with the exception that Lawrence Pilot's playing in Russia now, and yeah, maybe they look to free agency. Chad DeDominicis had a interesting article today on diebytheblade.com that I'll reference, and a piece that he wants to add to the blue line, maybe a couple of pieces that he wants to bring in and add to this group of players. So we'll go over that. I also want to obviously recap kind of everything what's going on in the NHL over the past 24 hours in terms of hub cities. CBA details, I guess, are starting to kind of surface for not only just this upcoming return to play, but also for the next couple years and beyond. And also the fact that players are going to be going back to the Olympics, which is great. That's excellent news. And then at 11 o'clock today, we're going to be speaking with Corey Snyder. If you don't know who he is, he's on Twitter at ShutdownLine. He's a pretty big part of the hockey analytics community. He's going to join us to talk a little bit about the Sabres going into next season and kind of maybe what they have to do in order to kind of turn the tide here and get back to playing competitive hockey again, as they have some big questions ahead. Partially, I mean, part of the reason I kind of brought him on was to get his thoughts on the defensive group, in particular Rasmus Ristolainen and Brandon Montour, who are hot topics in the analytics community. So we'll get his thoughts on the Sabres coming up at 11 o'clock. But of course, we'll get your thoughts at all times today. Any point you want to call in about the Sabres or anything for that matter, feel free to do so. 803-0550 or 1-888-552-550. Those are the phone numbers here to get a hold of us. If you want to text us, you could, of course, text us at the regular phone number that we have, 716-803-0550. If you try to text us at 550-550, we will not get those text messages anymore because, well, He's not active anymore, apparently. He might be active, but we don't get him anymore. So be sure to text us in the right number. Or you can also interact with us on Twitter this morning. You can follow me on Twitter at BJ Wilson WGR. You can follow the station on Twitter at WGR550. And be sure to give Corey Griswold a follow on Twitter as well. At Corey Griswold is where he's at. Corey with an E, by the way, the right way to spell it. And
spell
and,
it right.
It's funny. It's funny because Corey Snyder that's coming on is actually spelled with an E too. So his parents got it right in terms of spelling the right way to spell Corey.
Brothers in arms.
That's right. 803-0551-888-550-2550. So obviously the big news of this morning is kind of all the news that's surfacing about the NHL's return to play format, the NHL CBA, and kind of what's going to happen here moving forward as everything tries to get back to normal in the NHL. Obviously, things probably won't get back to normal until, you know, every team can play in their home arena and fans will be back in the arena. And the league is making legitimate money again instead of having to try and mitigate losses at this point because of the COVID-19 pandemic. But, of course, the speculation has been out there that the hub cities would be selected at some point this week, and it seems like the NHL has come to a decision, maybe not officially yet, but it seems like that it'll be Edmonton and Toronto selected as the NHL's hub cities. That was according to TSN's Bob McKenzie this morning. He tweets that out, and obviously I think this is the right choice because the other two cities that were the other finalists that were remaining in the hunt were Las Vegas and Chicago. Now, Chicago obviously is interesting just because, you know, you've got the United Center, you got a couple of other facilities that they could play at, and it's an area that hasn't really been altered with the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic as of yet, obviously because that's where Vegas comes in, because Vegas, obviously, they were a sort of a favorite to be a hub city and had been speculated at some time to be the one hub city for this return to play format because of the hotels and the services that they could offer and the proximity to the arenas that they're going to be playing in. So they were favored to be one of those cities, but obviously they've had spikes in COVID-19 cases, as has a lot of the southern and western states in the United States have had some significant spikes in positive COVID-19 tests. And especially with the Vegas employees that are going to be working at the hotels and casinos, they've had some spikes in positive cases. So obviously the NHL decided to pull the plug on Vegas and go to Edmonton and Toronto. And obviously, by doing just some brief research this morning, Canada is containing the COVID-19 crisis and pandemic quite well compared to obviously the United States, where there's been a significant increase in positive cases of the coronavirus. So the NHL is going to Canada. For we're all speculating, hasn't been made official yet, but it seems like at this point the two hub cities are going to be both in Canada, both in cities that have been able to contain the virus and keep the numbers down, which is a great thing. The only thing that I'm a little concerned about is just getting all the players over there and keeping them healthy and safe, obviously, because you definitely don't want the players going there not knowing that they're positive. The next thing you know, they're doing tests up there and they're testing positive, and maybe there's a spike in cases again. But I mean, it certainly is the positive outcome at this point is that these two cities were picked and that they're in a better environment than obviously the two United States cities that were still finalists for this. And again, obviously Chicago is a city right now and sort of the whole Northeast and, you know, a little bit towards the Midwest, where a lot of those states have not been super affected by some more significant spikes of the coronavirus. But obviously, Canada has done a nice job in keeping those numbers down and containing it. So obviously, the NHL going there is a positive step. And obviously, they are going to be playing in a couple of really good cities and some that will be able to handle having these teams in their cities and be able to handle having this return-to-play format. And obviously, this is just, you know, Toronto is pretty obvious. It's where the Hockey Hall of Fame is, and, you know, people in Toronto are crazy for hockey. And Edmonton, obviously, is a little, you know, it's different because it's way north in Alberta. But, hey, I mean, Wayne Gretzky was there. They've had multiple Stanley Cup championships, and they're a pretty big hockey market, too. So it certainly seems like that these two cities will be just fine as hub cities. And obviously, with the details of this hub city, obviously they'll go there right near the end of phase 3 of the NHL's return to play protocol. So it'll be July 10th as of right now for Phase 3, where players will begin to report to their home cities for formal training camps. It could be moved back to July 13th if there's some complications, but they still expect to have everything kind of happen on time. They'll report for about a two-week training camp, then travel to the hub cities where they'll play one exhibition game, and then after that point on July 30th, it's expected that the NHL will commence Phase 4, and Phase 4, of course, is the official return of play, which will commence and start the return-to-play format, which we'll see the play-in qualifying round, the best-of-five series. You'll see the seeding round robin, which will be between the top four teams in each conference that will kind of dictate the seeding for everything that's going to happen for the playoffs, at least. And then once those qualifying rounds are done and the final teams are dictated, those winning teams will advance to the playoffs, quote unquote. I mean, I think this whole thing is a playoff and should be considered a playoff, but the NHL doesn't like to consider it a playoff. And then, of course, the losers will get the chance to win Alexis Lafreniere with the number one overall pick. And I'm just not all for that. I made my point clear on the on the NHL draft lottery and how stupid I think it is, and I think they should just get rid of it and throw it to the sun. I could care less about the draft lottery. It should be, you know, the worst team gets the first pick, and you go from there. No questions asked. That's it. But I digress. So, Phase 3, July 10th. As of right now, still expected to be July 10th. Players report to training camp in their home cities. And then, later on, they'll travel to the hub cities, play one exhibition game in the city. And then, on July 30th, that's when things officially get started with the return-to-play format. Now, obviously, things are going to be a little interesting because it'll be this whole coronavirus pandemic has completely kind of thrown off everything in terms of the CBA, in terms of just everything that's been going on with the NHL and a normal schedule for the season. So as of right now, the NHL and the NHLPA have been talking. They have been negotiating the final kind of Phase 3, Phase 4 return to play protocols and getting all that stuff done. They're also talking about an extension of the CBA, which is great news, obviously, because labor peace is a huge thing that the NHL needs lately, because I don't think anybody wants another lockout. I mean, to have, what, this would be the fourth lockout since Gary Bettman took over as commissioner in like 92 or 93 or something like that, because there was the 94-95 shortened season, the 2004 lockout for the entire season, and then the 2012 lockout that resulted in the shortened season there. So to avoid another lockout would be excellent. Maybe a little bit of an adjustment to the CBA would not be such a bad thing too. But both the NHL and the NHLPA are talking. They are getting things kind of all figured out. They're trying to correct all the hiccups or anything like that and finalize a nice little deal that will take care of anything really that's going on with the salary cap for the next couple of years, anything that's going on with this season with trying to mitigate stuff, and of course, some other topics moving forward too. So that's the talks that's been going on for the past couple of days, and that's why any official announcement of the hub cities or anything like that hasn't been officially made, because they're just trying to finalize some of these details here and trying to get things hammered out. So again, they're working on, they're negotiating, they're talking, and it appears, this is according to Bob McKenzie as well, it appears to have resulted in an agreement on most issues on the Phase 3 / Phase 4 return to play protocols, the CBA extension, transition rules, and also, of course, the hub city decisions. McKenzie also adds, nothing carved in stone just yet. But if there are no hiccups in finalizing the tentative agreement, NHLPA membership could be voting on the return to play CBA, everything like that, by Friday or Saturday. So we might have to wait to see a decision on everything coming up later on this week. Could be July 3rd, July 4th. We get to see any official announcement like they've had for the Phase 2 protocols and like the format and everything like that. And also the just kind of the details of just like, hey, Phase 3, everybody's reporting, testing-wise, and all that kind of stuff. They did that right before Phase 2. And in case you missed any of that, it's available on our website, wgr550.com. You can always just search it up in the corner. There's a little like magnifying glass where you hit search and then you just type in like NHL Phase 2 and it'll show up there for you. So you can read up on that and it'll be very similar to that. It'll be a memorandum that will probably be sent out. Also, other little things that are being ratified during these negotiations is, you know, qualifiers and players that, you know, were playing in like Russia this past year, like Alexander Romanov, Kirill Kaprizov, Ilya Sorokin. They won't be eligible to play for the return to play format, so they can sign their contracts, but they won't have those contracts kick in officially until next season. Another interesting topic that's being discussed here, and this is from Elliot Freeman, of course, he's talking about the salary cap going forward, and this is pretty important because of what the Sabres could expect for the offseason and what kind of spending they could expect. So Elliot Freeman tweeted this out, and he said, some stuff to look forward to in the modified CBA, a flat salary cap, unless changed, because numbers were $81.5 million for the, modified CBA, flat salary cap, unless changed, numbers were $81.5 million for the next 2 years and $82.5 million in 2022-23. So that's going to be important because when you're looking at the salary cap in this perspective, obviously, I'm not sure if Cap Friendly here has updated what the projected salary cap is. So actually, the salary cap is right now the upper limit, 81.5 mil. So it's going to remain the same. It's going to remain 81.5 mil for the next 2 years. And then in 2022-23, it'll spike up one more million. So it'll be 82.5. So the Sabres right now, obviously, looking at the salary cap, their cap space, their projected cap space heading into this offseason is now $34.483 million. And then in 2021-22, it's $46.433 million, while in the 2022-23 season, that would be $56.708 million in cap space. So, I mean, obviously, they've got some contracts to get done. They got some extensions to sign. Again, we've mentioned a lot of these guys over this week where, you mean, you've got restricted free agents like Sam Reinhart, who's going to need a bigger contract. He's probably going to get signed significant long-term deal. I would think at the very least, they may go one more year on a bridge deal, but I would think that they're going to try to get Sam Reinhart re-signed to a longer-term deal. Dominic Cahoon probably will get another couple years on a deal before, you know, I think before he becomes an unrestricted free agent, but we'll see there. Victor Olofsson, I think, would get a nice little payday for the work that he's done over the past couple of years and maybe what we're expecting from him over the next few years. Curtis Lazar, I think, gets re-signed. And, of course, the defensive group we'll talk a little bit more about later on because I think that names like Brandon Montour and Rasmus Ristolainen are very interesting names because just with how the analytics community kind of sees them and how their impact on this team might be positive, might be negative going forward. But get some more thoughts, especially at 11 o'clock when we have Corey Schneider joining the show then at that point. But certainly some contracts, some interesting contracts that are going to have to be decided on this offseason. And again, $34.483 million is a good amount of cap space that the Sabres have. And if you look into re-signing some of these contracts, I mean, my guess is by the end of it, you'd have around $18 million worth of cap space left. And you could add that by, you know, trading for a significant player. If you trade away, you know, trade picks away or something like that, or trade a couple of prospects away that aren't going to cost a lot of money, and then you take on a bigger contract. I mean, maybe that'll cut the cap down, but $18 million or, you know, whatever it is, depending on what kind of contracts are being signed, it's not terrible. It's not terrible to have that space. So Sabres will have some contracts coming off the books. They'll have to re-sign a few guys coming up here, but certainly $81.5 million for the cap over the next 2 years is still not too bad. So at least we're getting a good look at what the cap is going to look like for the next couple of years. Freeman also adds that cap on escrow starting at 20% next season, moving down after that, and also the return to the Olympics. And that's also what I wanted to get to because the Olympics, man, it would have been a huge mistake if the NHL in 2 years when they go to Beijing, a place that they've been trying to grow the game of hockey over there and promote the NHL game over in China, if you weren't going over to China to play in the Olympics, that would have been a huge mistake if you were the NHL. You're just trying to grow the game. You're trying to expand your product and grow your brand across the world, for that matter. That's the goal that you want to have here, is everybody across the world knowing the game and knowing kind of what you're about. And especially in China, you've been playing preseason games over there. You've been going over there, and the fans over there seem to have taken a liking to it. And if you were going to go over there and not send some of those big names over there, I mean, any of the big names from any of these teams. I mean, you can look at any of the big names like Chicago and Boston, or, even Toronto, or some of these other bigger teams with big names on them, like Zdeno Chara from the Bruins, David Pastrnak from the Bruins, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, some of these other guys, Austin Matthews, even a Jack Eichel it could be considered here. All of those guys are now going to be able to go play and play the best competitive hockey that maybe the game of hockey sees in a four-year period with the Olympics. And it's a great game. We haven't seen the Olympics with NHL athletes since 2014 with the Sochi Olympics, and even then it was a great event. Canada won the gold again for a second straight time, and they had a dominant team. The U.S. was fun and electric. Other countries like Sweden, Russia, Finland, they were all super competitive, had super great teams. And obviously, when you looked at the 2018 Olympics, when there's no NHL players, when it was mostly professional Russian athletes or like KHLers or players from the Swedish Hockey League, the Finnish Liga, and all these other professional leagues in Europe playing, it was certainly a significant difference. I mean, the 2018 Olympics, I mean, I remember it was Germany and Russia in the final. Like, Germany was a pretty unique story just because I think they upset Canada. I think they also upset Sweden. I got to pull up the 2018 Winter Olympics and hockey. But Germany was like the Cinderella team. And they made it all the way through to the gold medal game. And they lost to the Olympic athletes of Russia. If you remember, always remember the Olympic athletes of Russia. That name, that team, because they won the gold medal. Ilya Kovalchuk was on that team. Kirill Kaprizov was on that team. Some great, great names. Like, here's the roster that Russia had. Russia, the gold medal winning Russia team, had these names. And I won't name all of them because some of them probably aren't familiar, but I'll read you the familiar names. You had Pavel Datsyuk on that team. Mikhail Grigorenko, former Sabres draft pick. Nikita Gusev, who now plays with the New Jersey Devils. You had Kirill Kaprizov, who is a Minnesota Wild prospect, and I think he was the one that scored the golden goal for the Russians in overtime. You also had Ilya Kovalchuk on that team. Sergei Mozyakin, if you probably don't remember that name, but Ryan Gates and I, when Ryan was still working here, we always used to make fun and mention that name quite a bit. And let's see, Vadim Shipachev, former Vegas Golden Knights, was also on that team. So, and like, obviously, if it was the NHL athletes, there'd be Ovechkin, Malkin, there'd be Kucherov on that team. A lot of really, really good players instead of these guys like Sergei Andronov and Bogdan Kiselevich and some of these other names. That's just like, if you're a hockey guy like me, it's just like, yeah, I heard of that name before. Oh, yeah, Slava Voynov was also on this Olympic team. But, like, a lot of the names are just kind of like, okay, I've heard of them, but I don't really care that they play in KHL or wherever they're playing. It's not really all that important to me. The German team did feature Christian Ehrhoff. He was on that team that won silver. He was on the defense, and I think he retired shortly after the Olympics. I think pretty much that was like his last kind of hoorah. Dominic Cahoon was on that team. Sabres forward. He played on that team before signing in the NHL. And other than that, Marcel Gotch, who used to play in the NHL, was on that team. And I couldn't tell you probably anyone else. Felix Schutz. I think Felix Schutz was a former Sabres draft pick, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, he was. Fourth round, 117th overall by the Sabres in the 2006 NHL draft. And here's your Canada team, by the way. I'll also get you the United States team because And I know I'm kind of going off here and rambling on about the Olympics with just like these rosters, but it's just so funny reading off these rosters because they're just names that are just like, what? Who the heck are these guys? Or like, oh yeah, I remember these guys. Gilbert Brulé was playing for Canada. He was a former first-round pick, I believe, and a guy that was highly touted before kind of fading away in the NHL real fast. Cody Golubev, who had a little mini tryout with the Sabres. Marc-Andre Grignani was part of that Canada team. They played for the bronze and won the bronze. Let's see here. Maxime Lapierre is a former NHL. I mean, a lot of these guys are former NHLers, but Maxime Lapierre, Mason Raymond. Derek Roy was part of that team that won bronze. Derek Roy's a bronze medalist. And, oh man, I really got to find the U.S. roster here. Where is this roster? There we go. Rosters. Let's go see the U.S. roster because there were some very interesting names with this U.S. team that just like will blow your mind at some of these names that are going to be playing for them. Let's see. Chad Billins is the very first name that shows up. Like, who's Chad Billins? Noah Welch. Who's Noah Welch? Like, Brian Gionta was on the team. If you remember, Brian Gionta played for that team. And then I think shortly after that, signed with the Boston Bruins. Let's see here. Ryan Donato, who was playing in college at the time, was on that team. Jordan Greenway was another college kid playing for that team. Jim Slater, fun, interesting little fact here. Jim Slater was the pick that the Thrashers took in 2002 that was originally traded to the Sabres in the Dominic Hasek trade. He was a part of that U.S. Olympic team in 2018. Will Borgen was on that team, current Sabres player. Troy Terry, current Ducks player, was on that team. And David Leggio, Williamsville native, was one of the goaltenders on that team. But, like, everybody on the roster was just, like, so bad. And looking at that, it's just like, why would I want to watch the Olympics if there's no NHL players? Yes, there's former NHL players. Yes, there's, like, oh, there's this name, there's this name, there's this name. But, like, it didn't really care. Nobody cared about it at that point. You had the women's hockey, which was great because there were some of the best players in the entire world playing on that team. And absolutely, I wanted to watch that, and I did, and it was great. U.S. women won the gold in 2018 in the Winter Olympics, but like the NHL, like the men's Olympics in hockey, just a lot of these names, it's just like, why should I care? And now it's going to care again because they're going to be playing in the Olympics not only just in 2022 in Beijing, but in 2026. And I have no idea where the 2026 Winter Olympics are right now. I don't even know if they've decided on where those Winter Olympics are going to be. I'm just doing a quick check here. And it looks like it's going to be in Italy again. Yeah, Milan, Italy. Milan, Italy is going to be hosting the 2026 Winter Olympics. So 2022 is going to be in Beijing. And guess what? The NHL players are going to be back, which is a very welcome sight to see because Olympic hockey without NHL players is just very, very uninteresting. Unless there are certain ties, like Sweden had Rasmus Dahlin on it, but even then, he never played. He only, I think, played in he played in one game, got an assist, and then like immediately afterwards kind of had a turnover to result in a goal against and didn't turn out great for them. But I mean, he played. He was still there. He was the youngest player to play in the Olympics that year. But other than that, get the NHL players back in the Olympics, and that's looks like what's going to happen as part of this next CBA. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. We got a phone call here. Let's get to it real quick. Let's go to Jim in Cheektowaga. Jim, good morning. You're on WGR.
Hi. Yesterday you talked about Anaheim having a second-line center.
Yeah.
Is there a defenseman also that you would be interested in?
Hold on. I got to bring up their roster real quick. Just like because
three-player deal.
Okay. Yeah. What are you thinking?
Well, the center that you mentioned, a defenseman that you'd be interested in, and a forward prospect that they might have that might be a potential goal scorer. And I'm willing to give our number one draft pick, Risto, and Mittelstad or some other player that you might be interested in.
Who's the number one center that or the players that you're mentioning there? Because I think the defenseman that I mentioned yesterday was Hampus Lindholm.
So Somebody that went with the Eichel trade that came up.
Right. Trevor Zegras was the player there, and I think the NHL player that I mentioned was Sam Steele.
Yeah. Well, my first-round pick, Risto and Mittelstadt, or another player or prospect for those three.
I mean, if I could get all those assets, thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it. If I can get all those assets for the pieces from Anaheim, by all means, I would probably try to make that trade. Obviously, with Ristolainen, we don't know. I mean, we don't know what to expect from him. And once again, we did see the nice little spike and increase in play from him under Ralph Kruger's very nice simplified system. And we'll get into Ristolainen a little bit right after this break. But if I can get Lindholm, who's 26 years old and has got two more years left on a deal worth $5.205 million, if I can get Sam Steele, who's going to be one more year left on his entry-level contract, a pretty good player that has potential to be a second-line center, at his ceiling. And then a guy like Trevor Zegras, who's a former ninth overall pick last year. I mean, if I can get all those guys for the eighth overall pick for Ristolainen and for Casey Mittelstadt, by all means, I'd make that trade. I just don't know if either team could come to a deal like that. Maybe they can, but thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it, and it's good to talk that way. It's good to talk trades, potential trades. I like that talk. I like the trade talk. I like these potential names coming up. Just don't mention Jack Eichel in a trade ever. Don't, because it's not happening. Stop trying to make these mock trade Jack Eichel articles happen. It's not going to happen. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Thanks again, Jim, for the call. We'll step aside, take a timeout. When we come back, I want to dive into the defensive group. We'll go through who's coming back, what the defensive group in Buffalo could look like, and do you want to trade Rasmus Ristolainen and or Brandon Montour? That's our poll today. What should the Sabres do with Rasmus Ristolainen and Brandon Montour this offseason? You can vote. Trade both. Trade Ristolainen, trade Montour, or keep both. Those are the options. Vote. Give us a call. Feel free to let us know your thoughts. And we'll put them on the air if they're good enough. So, Brayton Wilson filling in once again for the Instigators today. Corey Griswold on the board, filling in for myself, who usually runs the board there. You're listening to WGR.
Season, I will not be convinced that they've improved the team at all. That even includes if you trade Reinhardt. Because if you trade Reinhardt, I don't think you improve your team. Unless you do some type of one-for-one trade, which could happen, but usually when you see a player like Reinhardt go, you know, general managers fall into that thing where they're going to get quantity over quality. So instead of getting a one-for-one even trade, you're going to get kind of Reinhardt and some young roster player, a B-level prospect, and a draft pick. You know, that's not really going to improve your team, at least at this point.
That's Chad D. DeMinesis. He writes for both Die by the Blade and Expected Buffalo. He joined Howard and Jeremy on the Wester Hotline, a week ago. 8 days ago. If you missed that, you can find it on demand at WGR550.com. Or if you missed anything within a 24-hour period, of course, you could use the Radio.com rewind function on the Radio.com app. Download the Radio.com app today and go back in time anytime, anywhere. Brayton Wilson here with you once again, filling in for the Instigators this week. They've got the week off to kind of recharge their batteries for the 4th of July weekend. So thanks again for tuning in. Thanks again for being part of the show. You can join us at any time throughout this week by joining us by calling 803-0550, or you can reach us at our toll-free number 1-888-552-550. We've got another phone call on the line. Let's get to that right now. Charles on a cell phone. Charles, good morning. You're on WGR.
Hey, what's going on, Brayton?
I'm doing pretty good for this Wednesday. Thanks again for calling in, man. What's up?
Yeah, no problem. I just wanted to bring up, obviously, there's a lot of talk about trading the first-round pick, and I'm on board with this 100%. I think they should. I think Eichel and Skinner are in their prime right now. We can't waste their prime for development. And I know that might sound bad looking towards the future, but trade the pick. You know, our first-round picks haven't really panned out when it comes to development the last few years or so. And so that's my first point. You know, get better now with Eichel and Skinner in their prime. Second point is, you know, I try to listen as much as I can, but one name I haven't heard a lot of throughout the Instigators or other shows on GR is Jimmy Vesey. And I was just curious what your thoughts are on Jimmy Vesey. I don't even know what his contract is, but he's just a name that I haven't heard much these past few weeks. So I'll leave you with that, Brayton.
Yeah, sure thing, Charles. Thanks for the phone call. I talked a little bit about Jimmy Vesey yesterday, and here's my viewpoint on Jimmy Vesey in case you missed it. I think Jimmy Vesey this year underwhelmed from what everybody kind of expected him to kind of come into Buffalo and try and produce. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent this offseason. He cost $2.275 million with his last contract. I'd expect him to probably get that much or maybe a little less in his next contract. I mean, if the Sabres certainly want to try to take another shot, see maybe if a second go around with the Sabres would be beneficial for him and maybe he can find his game, like the true game that he can play, then sure. But he's 27 years old. He put up the worst production of his career this year. And, you know, he certainly is a guy that has the upside. He can put the puck in the net. He's a decent two-way guy. Obviously, he won the Hobey Baker Award in 2016 and was that huge topic of debate with, you know, oh, where is he going to land? Are the Sabres going to sign him after trading for his rights for a third-round pick? I mean, he goes to New York, and the year before he comes to Buffalo, 2018-19 with New York, he put up 17 goals and 35 points in 81 games, which not bad. Not bad production. Had his best year with the Rangers. Then comes to Buffalo, and I just felt the entire time he was underwhelming. I mean, I thought that maybe he could have played a bigger role or been put in better situations, but at the same point, 64 games, 20 points, 9 goals, 11 assists. And his possession numbers were not bad. They weren't bad at all. I think if I remember, let's see, where did these numbers go here? I'm using hockeyreference.com, and they usually have a nice little, there it is. Just scrolled down a little too far. So his possession numbers were better this year. I mean, he had the best offense, he had the best Corsi numbers and everything like that this offseason or this season with the Sabres. His PDO was pretty good, and he got some more zone times in the offensive zone, and I just still think that his season was a little underwhelming. But I'm not opposed to bringing back Jimmy Vesey. If they want to bring back Jimmy Vesey, absolutely they should. Maybe not should, but I mean absolutely they can. So that was my viewpoint on Jimmy Vesey. If they let him go, they let him go. If they want to bring him back, they re-sign him, and he's back, then he's back, and I'm okay with that. I just like to see him take that next step and actually step into a bigger role, though, when he comes back next season, if he comes back to the Sabres. So thanks for the call. 803-0551, 888-552-550. So obviously, the discussion that I wanted to have today is the defensive group, because yesterday we talked about the offense, and today I want to talk about the defense and looking forward to how this defensive group could look next season. And obviously, when looking at the defensive group, I'm at kevfriendly.com. It's a nice little reference tool. And looking at this group of guys that the Sabres have, up at the NHL level, obviously they've got to get Brandon Montour re-signed to a restricted deal. Lawrence Pilot has walked out the door. He is off to the KHL, although they can offer him a qualifying offer and hold on to his rights for an extra 3 years, which I think they should do and I'd expect them to do. Then you have guys like Colin Miller, who's under contract for 2 more years, $3.875 million. His role, I think, was not at the level that I think that I'd want to see from him, but as the year went on, I think he played better, and I think that his trust in the system got better from Ralph Kruger. You have Jake McCabe, who seems like has been here for eons, even though he really hasn't. He's got 1 more year at $2.85 million. I'd be interested to see what kind of decisions they make with him in the offseason. Because Jake McCabe, at times, looks so solid, looks so good in both ends of the ice. He can provide a little bit of an offensive uptick in his game. While defensively, he can be physical in front of the net. He can make smart decisions, and he's more of a defensive guy, I think. But there are often times where he makes some questionable decisions, as has a lot of these guys on this blue line for the past several years. And if Jake McCabe's here for another year, I'm not going to, throw my hands up and say, what the heck, come on. It'll be one where, okay, let's see where it goes. Because I think he played a lot with Rasmus Ristolainen last year, and then he played a little bit with Henry Jokiharju. And Henry Jokiharju, I thought, was one of their most underrated players all year. He played pretty well. And maybe they get back together again and they play again next season and they're paired once more. But I'll be interested to see what happens with Jake McCabe. Obviously, Rasmus Dahlin is entering the last year of entry-level contract, as is Jokiharju. So both of those guys are going to be looking to possibly get some nice contract extensions after this upcoming season. Dahlin's the type of guy who could be up for a huge contract extension after this season. It's probably not going to be a Jack Eichel situation for Dahlin where talks will happen this offseason and then he'll get that nice long contract extension. But you never know. Maybe it might come out of the blue because I don't really expect it right now. I'd expect it to be a next offseason issue where they talk about a potential contract extension for Dahlin and probably the same for Jokiharju. But that's at least the defensive group in the NHL. You've also got Matt Hunwick, who is probably going to be done. I think he has a neck injury that is technically career-ending. He's an unrestricted free agent. I think, obviously, that he's done. And then you look at the group of defensemen that are under contract right now for the Sabres. Brandon Hickey's a restricted free agent. If they let him walk, they let him walk. He's been in and out of the lineup constantly in Rochester, and although he looks like a exact replica of Matt Molson, I'm not sure what more he could bring to the table for the Sabres organization. Jacob Bryson is an interesting name just because that he did have such a productive first year in Rochester and really, really showed the growth in his game of being a really underrated potential two-way defenseman, more of an offensive guy. But, you know, obviously some people will look to his size and be like, well, he's too small to be a defenseman. But the way he moves around the ice, the way that he maneuvers and the way that he plays the puck is really, really fun to watch just because he sees the game at a different level and he's able to use his speed and use his skating to his advantage to get through guys, to fight guys off and really play a really nice, well-rounded game. So it'll be interesting to see Jacob Bryson maybe in the next year or two. I don't think he makes the NHL right off the bat, but I definitely think that he will be a guy that could make his debut this year and then maybe after next year maybe gets the chance to fight for a full-time spot. The guy that I'm interested to see if he could fight for a full-time spot and win is Will Borgen. Because Will Borgen, over the past couple of years in Rochester, has really, really grown his game. He became a leader, especially this season in the locker room and on the ice with his play. His skating is outstanding. His physicality is outstanding. He doesn't really put up a lot of points, but he's a good passer. And he can be an offensive threat, especially with the way he skates. And there's just one shift that I saw. I think it was, I don't remember if it was last season or the season before when I was covering the Amerks in Rochester, where it just showed his capabilities where he gets the puck in the offensive zone, takes it down low, starts to move the puck around, puck comes, you know, keeps moving around. He gets to the side of the net and finds a way to get a shot off or maybe just a scoring chance and maybe misses. And the puck comes around the boards. Toronto, I think it was the Marlies, they started back the other way, and he just stormed back into the defensive zone and made a really nice play to break up the play in the neutral zone. And it's just that type of work ethic and the way that he skates and his effort that he puts out there on a nightly basis that makes me believe that he's going to fight for a roster spot this year. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if he did earn a spot this year on the blue line. It wouldn't surprise me at all, and I think that he has every chance this year to make this roster. It's not a situation where, you know, if he doesn't make the roster, that's going to be it for him. But I'm saying that, you know, if he fights his way onto the roster, don't be surprised. And then you've also, I mean, and the rest of these guys, Casey Fitzgerald, I liked what I saw last year from him. I don't think he played as much as maybe we wanted to see. And, you know, that's maybe going to change with the way that the developmental process is going to work now with the new coaching staff and everything coming to Rochester, so maybe we'll see Casey Fitzgerald. I tend to like his game. Casey Nelson, unrestricted free agent. I wouldn't be surprised if he walked during the offseason and went somewhere else. Matthew Spencer, restricted free agent. Maybe they offer him something, but I think he was mostly in the East Coast, in the ECHL last year. John Gilmore, $700,000 unrestricted. If they want to bring him back, that's fine, but he is such a liability in his own zone. His offensive game is pretty good, but his defensive game is a train wreck for the most part. And then, of course, you got Matias Samuelsson and Oskari Laaksonen coming in. Laaksonen from Finland, Samuelsson from the college ranks. So those guys will probably, I'd say probably, start out in the AHL next year and then have to develop and work their way up to the NHL. But it certainly is a decent group. And, you know, Brandon Montour and Rasmus Ristolainen are the two names. And I know we got to take a break here, but I will mention those guys when we come back and just give you my thoughts on the future of those guys and where they kind of fit. And Chad DeDominicis, again, he provided some thoughts when he was on with Howard and Jeremy last week. And I'll play a clip from you coming back from the break just on his thoughts on what, you know, maybe should be the direction for those guys. So 803-0551, 888-550-2550, listening to WGR.
Neither one have had very good performance or impact, so I think if those are your choices, if you can't move both, like in this scenario, I think you take the one, the option where they're going to be off your roster, off your books faster. And so if my choices are between signing Montour for a five-year deal or keeping Risto for two, I keep Risto for two just because I don't have to deal with Montour's years three, four, and five of continuing to be bad.
That's Ryan Stimson, former writer for The Athletic, another part of the hockey analytics community, joining Jody Biasi a couple of weeks ago on Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR. Brayton Wilson here with you, filling in for the Instigators this week. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks again for your interactions all throughout the week. 803-0551, 888-550-2550 are the numbers here. And obviously, going into the break, I kind of teased what I thought about coming up here with Rasmus Ristolainen and Brandon Montour, because the Twitter poll that I put up today ask, what should the Sabres do with Rasmus Ristolainen and Brandon Montour this offseason? And the responses have been mostly in favor of trading both of those guys, while trading Ristolainen is next in line, 31%, trade Montour 9%, and keep both is at 12%. And it's really interesting because when the Sabres acquired Brandon Montour, Jeremy White, our colleague here on WGR, really spoke highly of Brandon Montour and the idea of going to get him. And Chad DeDominicis has brought up a good point where it's just like, you know, his numbers in Anaheim, you know, they were what they were. And some people thought, you know, well, they aren't great numbers, but, you know, he's playing under Randy Carlyle. And Randy Carlyle is a very old school, you know, more of a guy that, you know, is not going to rely on, you know, puck moving defensemen to really kind of make play happen. So when he came to Buffalo and came and played under Phil Housley at first, the thought was, okay, let's see how this goes. Let's see how Brandon Montour adjusts to a new system and you know, will his analytics flourish and get better in a new hockey team and a new system and everything? Well, Chad said that, you know, the system, you know, it restricted him and it restricted the puck moving defenseman type of players and that his game, not really great defensively, so the numbers that he was putting up in Anaheim were almost the same that he was putting up in Buffalo in a year and a half span. So, with that, I mean, when looking at it, do you want to try and move on from Brandon Montour? Will that help you land an extra piece? Will you try to trade Rasmus Ristolainen? Because, I mean, Ristolainen, again, during his offseason presser, stated, like, hey, I know that if I'm one of the guys to move, I'm probably the first one to go. If there's going to be changes, I'm probably one of the first guys. My thought process is, obviously, if you could trade both of those guys and make the team better, whether you bring in another defensive asset or two, or you help bring in that second line center that you need behind Jack Eichel, by all means, you probably should be looking to make the trade. And I know some people don't want that because, you know, Ristolainen's a tough cookie in front of the net. He's a tough physical defenseman that's not afraid to get into altercations in front of the net. But at the same point, you look at the numbers for Rasmus Ristolainen, and they've never really been good. And again, this year they were better. This year they were better only because everything got super simplified for him. Everything was, I mean, when I say dumbed down, it kind of makes him sound, you know, I don't know, but it's just not the great way to put it. But, like, it just got so much simpler for Rasmus Ristolainen this year in Ralph Kruger's system, and the numbers showed. Like, I mean, analytics-wise, we'll talk about it with Corey Snyder coming up here in a matter of moments, where the numbers, analytics-wise, for him were not great, and they've been so-so over the years, and they just fluctuate all the time. And under Kruger, it seemed to get a little better. And, you know, are the Sabres going to try to keep going with him, even though he's played in so many games in his career? He's played nearly 500 games in his NHL career, and he is, I don't think he's turned 26 yet. He's still 25. He turns 26 in October. Like, how much more do we need to see of Rasmus Ristolainen to finally come to a conclusion? It's like, okay, this is what we have. He brings some offense to his game. He's not afraid to be physical. He can lay the body down. He can, you know, be strong in front of the net. However, there are some huge liabilities and questions in his overall game. And that's something that I will bring up with Corey Schneider coming up, as he will join us here at Shutdown Line on Twitter. Hockey analytics guy, be sure to tune in and get some thoughts there, as we'll ask him a few questions on Montour, Ristolainen, Sam Reinhart, and a few other things about the Sabres coming up here in the next hour. Brayton Wilson filling in for the Instigators this week as we're rolling along here, 1 hour to go here on WGR.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.